Hey everyone, this is your boy Daily News from the Real Dream Podcast. On behalf of Duke Mailman and I, we want to thank all of you guys for listening to us and supporting us. If you like what you hear, please follow us on our social media pages. We're at The Real Dream Podcast on Facebook. We're at TRDcast on Twitter and Instagram. And if that's not enough for you, look us up on Linktree at linktree.com/TRDcast. Thank you all for the support and enjoy the episode. Welcome to the Real Dream Podcast. I'm your host, along with my boys here, Duke and Mailman. How you guys doing tonight?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'm good.
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. We had a little nice holiday break.
I'm feeling good. I'm feeling real good.
Good, good. We had a nice little holiday break, so this episode's delayed. But you know what? We're back. I hope you guys had a good holiday.
But yeah, let's hope y'all got all y'all fingers still.
It was some crazy
and toes and eyes.
Yeah, so be careful out there. I hope you guys are safe. Like always, man, follow us on Twitter, Facebook. Hit us up and listen to us where everywhere podcasts are available. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and just a host of others. Wherever you listen to the podcast at, we're probably there. Just search us, Real Dream Podcast or TRDcast. I hope we can hear from you guys. Subscribe to us, shoot us a message or anything. Let us know how you feel and what you think of us. Off that note, let's get back to the topics. One of the things we're going to be talking about today is the importance that we place on the role of the father. So this is not how we view the importance of a father compared to a mother. So let's nix that out right out the back. We're just talking about the importance that we place our role with the title of father. That's what this is about. I'll start this off with you, Mailman. What's your take on this? How do you feel about the idea and the importance you have as a father?
Let me see how I feel about this. Let me start out by saying this. Coming from a man that didn't know his father growing up, I know the importance of a father all too well. Because as a kid growing up, that's all I thought about was, oh, what was my father like? Whether he was a good person or a bad person, I wanted to know. You know what I mean? Do I get this from my father? Do I get that from my father? Do I act like my father in this way? Do I act like my father in that way? And not knowing those things almost kind of leaves a void in your life and in your heart. So for me, you know what I'm saying? I feel like the importance of a father is almost detrimental to, you know what I'm saying, a child's growth. Like they, because if not, that child is going to be constantly wondering, who is this other part of me? Where is this other part of me coming from? I feel like my role, and I went the opposite way. So my father wasn't in my life, and then he passed in when I was 14 years old. I didn't find out he died until the anniversary of his death when I was 15 years old. And I feel like I said, I would never be that type of a father to abandon my child. I don't care what my relationship with her mom is but I will never abandon my kid. And I feel like, because I know the importance of, and I've seen what it's like to not have a father in my life. So I was like, I would never do that to my child.
Do you feel like that's affected other aspects of your relationship with your child?
I don't know if it's affected it yet. I mean, time will tell. But I do feel like, you know what I mean, I'm stumbling in the dark with this whole being a father thing, because I didn't have that father, you know what I'm saying? I didn't have a father to show me or to see what a father is supposed to be like. So I'm kind of just winging it and trying to just be the best dad that I can be for my dog.
No, I hear that. I hear that. Yeah, me and Duke, we still have ours in the picture. That's deep. Duke, how do you feel about this? How do you feel about your responsibility of being a father in your eyes?
For me, so speaking on the fact that I did have a father, or have a father, I should say, not did, because he's still alive. Me and my dad bumped heads a lot. There's some things that he did that I don't necessarily agree with, but there's things that he did that shaped me into being the person that I am now. Mm-hmm. So for me, I take the stuff that I think he did well and incorporate that, but I also take the things that I feel like didn't necessarily go the right way. And a lot of it has to do with I'm the first child, and the first child, we the fuck up child. So we the child that you fuck up with, basically, as a parent. That's just how it go, unfortunately.
We the guinea pigs. We the guinea pigs.
I mean, I got three younger sisters. They all used to tell me that they looked to see, they saw everything I did and how I was treated, and that scared them straight. So welcome to them, because they as all a younger,
as a younger sibling, I can vouch for that.
Exactly, you know? So, but on the real, when it comes down to it, I know that my dad and my mom, of course, but since we're talking about the role of a father right now, I know my dad did the best that he possibly could do. And that's why now, at the age that I am, we can talk about and have that good relationship again. Because for a little bit, I'm not going to lie, for a little bit, me and my pops didn't talk. And we didn't talk just because of things that happened in my childhood that I had to get over, that I had to understand why he did what he did, because he felt like that's what he needed to do, because he had a knucklehead son and he needed to find a way to reach me. And yeah, at the time that it was happening, I was like, fuck that. Or he don't know what the hell he talking about, and so on and so forth. But then as you get older, you realize, damn, he didn't know what the fuck he was talking about. You know, and no, I didn't like that lesson when I was in the middle of learning it. But when I can go back and think about it, I'm like, okay, and it helped me now. Because when I come to a crossroads, and it's either I can go the right way or this shit can go left, I can hear him. And he like, nigga, you already know. If you go the wrong way, it's not going to end well. So that allows me to be like, okay, let me straighten up and let me do this the right way.
Right. I think I've said this to you guys before, like, but we as parents, we always worry about what society may do to our kids, or how society might damage our kids, but we never think about the damage that we might do to our kids.
Yeah, you did say that before, yeah.
And that's like my biggest thing that I worry about is like what Duke's saying, like, you know what I'm saying? Am I doing the right thing? Am I doing the right thing now? Is this gonna benefit them later? Or, you know what I'm saying? Am I just fucking up?
I just feel like at the end of the day, you gotta do what you feel is best. And you're not always gonna have the right answer, but you're not always gonna have the wrong answer. And like I said, I don't agree with everything that my pops did, but at the end of the day, it got the message through to me on what needed to be done for me to become a father to my children now. What about you, News?
Man, my dad was a hard ass. Y'all know that. Like, I came from one of those families where my dad was, okay, I'm gonna give you a hug, but you got 5 hugs for your lifetime. And you better periodically use those properly or else you run out. Like, that's just who he is, you know? My dad didn't hug me on my wedding day. We played catch. That's who he is. You know what I mean? No.
On your wedding day?
Yeah. No, he didn't hug me on my wedding day. We played catch.
Wow.
Yeah. But no, that's who he is. Like, I know, I know some people look at it like, man, that's crazy. Your dad is an asshole. No, man. My dad was tough, and he made me tough, and he was a lot harder on me than he was the rest of the kids. Like we were talking about, the oldest is usually the guinea pig.
But do you think that has something to do with the whole men, you know what I'm saying, are not supposed to show emotions, and, you know what I'm saying, will always be tough and things like that, and that's why your dad was kind of tough on you?
Oh, absolutely. Most
definitely. Yeah, absolutely. Same here, absolutely. Most definitely.
Yeah.
Well, but, I don't know. I ain't had no dad. Tell me.
Yeah, but you had a mentor, though. I remember you telling me you had a mentor.
I did have a mentor, but my mentor came later in life, and it still was a different dynamic, because, you know, he was there for me, to give me advice, and everything that he told me was always based on what the Bible said. And it was, you know what I'm saying? So it was always good sound advice, don't get me wrong, but you know what I'm saying? And I always looked at him like he was a father, because he was the only male I had in my life that was actually, you know what I'm saying, trying to do anything for me and steer me in the right direction. But it still wasn't the same as, you know what I'm saying, having my biological father there.
Yeah. No, I get that. It's not the same. It's not the same.
Shout out to my mentor. I freaking love that man to death. I still, to this day, other than you, you fellas, that's the only man I ever loved.
With me and my dad has always been like hard on me, but at the same token, he's always been like that conscious too. Like my dad has never accepted me giving excuses. He's never accepted me saying, oh, well, this happened, this, that, and the third. Like, so there's always like that whole, oh, dad, I'm having issues with my relationship. Okay, well, what can you do better? Oh, dad, I'm having issues with work. Okay, well, what can you do better? What can you do differently? It's always this idea that you control what you can kind of thing, because you can't control life. And that's probably why I'm still here to this day, because as y'all know, I've been through some shit. And so the fact that he always had that programmed into me was like one of the things that like I love about him. One of the things I hated about my dad is he always had this saying, you're behind the eight ball. Do you know what that means? Have y'all heard that saying before? You're behind the eight ball.
Yeah, I've heard that.
I hated that saying because I didn't play pool, so I didn't know what the hell that meant.
And it wasn't, you gotta call that shot.
Well, no. So, like, if you're behind an eight ball, that means your ball, like, in pool, you're supposed to set up your next shot.
You're
supposed to be thinking ahead. Right. And so, if you're behind the eight ball, that means you didn't properly plan. You were looking short term, not long term. So now you got to work harder to get to your next shot. And he used to always be like, you're behind the eight ball. Now you got to work harder to get to where you want to go. But you also got to remember, not once you get there, you got to plan your next shot. And I hated it because it wasn't until I was like 17 that I actually understood pool. And I was like, oh, he's been saying this since I was like eight. Now I get it.
That's what calling your shot. You need to know where it's going beforehand. And you got to be able to say, hey, this is where I'm going. You know what I mean? So not only is it, you know what I'm saying, you got to be planning ahead, but you got to know what's ahead and be able to plan it out. And you are directly in control of going in the direction that you want to go into. Yep. I can see that. That's a good reference. I missed out on all this shit, y'all, you know what I'm saying? That y'all was getting from y'all dad. I had to learn that shit myself.
Yeah, it was, don't get me wrong, it was frustrating, but like, because I saw growing up, you saw how hard he was on you. And I'm the oldest of a bunch of kids, so, and I have a ton of siblings. So it was like, he's so hard on me. And it was a resentment like Duke had too, where it was like, why are you so hard on me? And you giving everyone else a pass. I lost football my junior year because my grades weren't up to par. And he let every one of his kids play sports throughout every year they were in school, whether their grades were on the level or not. And it was just like, man, why are you doing this? And now to this day, I'm just like, I'm thankful he did. You know what I mean? Like, I'm truly thankful.
And you know what I'm saying? What do you feel like back to the original question, like, you know what I'm saying, the importance, your importance of being a father?
I think it's a balance. I tell people all the time that, like, women are blessed with the ability to have a baby, you got 9 months of building a child in front of you, right? Or inside you. There's a maturation process where you become a woman to a mother. Right. And it's a 9 month process. Whereas men, we don't get that. It's not real until the baby's born and you hold that baby for the first time. And that is when you have to, or you typically instinctively change, right? You go from, I'm a man to a father. And if you don't make that change, then you don't make that change at all. Like, that's really that one opportunity where it's like, bam, I'm a dad now. You know what I mean? And so I think, for me, being a father is like the most important role that I have in my life. And so, and I take things from my dad, y'all know, and at the same token, I'm extremely like, daddy, can I have a hug? You can have a hug whenever the hell you want a hug.
When I first see you, then wake up in the morning, go to sleep at night, first thing is I'm giving you a hug.
Yeah. And so, there's things I take from my dad, and there's things that I take from the idea of being a father nowadays. It's a new climate. It's a new day. I'm okay.
We got new things to worry about too, yes, with social media and cell phones. And
mine's a daughter. I mean, if I had a son, it'd probably be a little bit different. But yeah, no, it's, you gotta be able to connect with it.
It ain't no different with a son.
No,
it isn't.
No,
I beg you.
No, you still gonna worry. You still gotta submit the same values either way. Sure. You know, so it's really not that much different. Yeah, they're going to be knuckleheads at different times, and you're going to communicate differently to each sex, so to speak, but it's still the same.
I feel like,
in my experience, it has been.
I feel like with a boy, you only got one penis to worry about. With a girl, you got all penises to worry about.
Yeah.
Either way, you still got to worry about the baby.
Yeah.
But either way, you still got to worry about a baby coming.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm glad our babies ain't nothing but 10 and 11 years old right now. Man, I am not looking forward to that shit. Don't be calling me Pop Pop and Grandpa and all that kind of shit. I ain't that old.
No. I'm telling you right now, that 9 months when she has her first child, because I know eventually my daughter will be a 9 months where I am only going to focus on what my name will be going for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, right?
Because I feel like I'm not going to let y'all choose my name. I get to choose this one. I'm either going to have Pop-Pop, Grandpa,
I'm definitely going with Pop-Pop.
Pop-Pop?
Yeah, or Pop-Pop.
No, I'm dreading it, man. I am dreading it.
I'm probably going to go with Pop-Pop.
I mean, it's just one final thing on that, too. Just remember, too, women are blessed to have that bond when they have that kid inside them. They're bonding with the child already. Yeah. Our bond, like you were saying earlier, news, our bond starts when we can physically, tangibly see that kid. So that's part of the reason why the relationship is a little different as well, because the mama basically knows almost everything about the damn baby by the time it come out. We just starting to learn. We just trying to figure out, like, okay, you like this, you like that. The mom, because she's blessed with that, and, you know, she already knows all that. So she's already ahead of the game. That's why, you know, it's a different feel to be a father. Obviously, none of us will ever know how it feels to be blessed to be a mother. But, you know, but that's a different feeling too as a father, is you don't start your bond for the most part. Yes, we can feel the baby move and kick and all that, but we're not blessed with actually feeling that baby inside of us or anything like that too.
Right. Yeah, there's that constant reminder that bond, life. Yeah, that bond. Yeah.
Already have that bond. We got to try to create it.
I remember holding it, and I remember thinking to myself, like, man, you got to go to college.
Like, that's what you thought.
Yes, I remember thinking, I was like, wow, you got to go to college. Mm-hmm. Like, the economy is not going to be, you can't just go to high school. I got to figure this shit out on how to get you there. Everything changes. And that's why.
My initial thought when the first time I ever hold my daughter, first saw my daughter, first laid eyes on her, the first thing I thought was, you are perfect. That's literally
mine. Looked like a little alien.
I was like, she is perfect. My daughter was a preemie. She was 2 weeks early.
Yeah, that's
right. You know what I'm saying? She was 2 pounds, 14 ounces. Yeah. That was the worst and roughest 2 months of my life when my daughter was born. Yep. You know what I'm saying? But I still, when she was born, the first thing that came to my mind was still, you are perfect.
One of the things I was thinking about, and we talked about a little bit off air, when it comes to being a father, these little kids got your heart and they can do whatever they want with it, right? But man, there's such power and motivation with that. Like, I don't know about you guys, but I think once I became a dad, all my priorities just reset. And the motivation to succeed and to make a life better for her, or just, like, I didn't even think about making a life better for me, like, until she was in the picture. Like, as much as I do now. Does that make sense?
Most definitely. Because before my daughter was born, I was already thinking, you know what I'm saying, like, nothing about just me, myself. Like, I was the only person I need to worry about. Like, I didn't really care about, you know what I'm saying, what I did, because I knew ultimately I was the only one that was going to have to, you know what I'm saying, deal with the consequences behind my actions. But then once my daughter was born, it was like, oh, I can't just be thinking about myself or how my actions are going to affect me. I got to worry about how they're going to affect her and try to make the best decision I can for her as well as myself. But ultimately, her first.
I totally agree, man. It's your priorities just switch. And
no longer about you.
No, it's not. And another thing is how I see fathers now, too. My dad had a hard life growing up, too. You know what I mean? Just as a kid and as an adult. So I get why he was so hard on me and why he was so tough and just straight to it. But at the same token, it's like before, I didn't see it that way. I just saw it like, man, you just using me as a guinea pig. You're so rough on me for no reason. And then now I'm like, no, I understand absolutely why you were, and I'm thankful for it. And it's the same thing where there's times where I hate being tough on her. I hate giving her the real 100%, you know, unfiltered, this is what life is conversation. But at the same token, I'm like,
you have to, like, do it.
I have to, yeah, because you're in a different world. You got to know these things.
Let's move to the next.
On to the next topic. We're going to talk about our health. As we have claimed multiple times, this podcast is the idea of us growing into the real dream, that real dream becoming a reality. And so we're all at starting points on a lot of different aspects of our life. One of those things is health. And so health has just recently with us three have become a very important thing, all for different reasons. And I just want to, you know, touch basis on that. Like, what was that flip of the switch moment? Because in essence, we all were athletic in school. We all played football or baseball or track or basketball, whatever the case may be. Then we came adults, and then there was this invention of home-cooked meals that got to us, and chicken fried everything. And so we gained weight this last few years. We're like, hey, let's focus on our health. And whether it be making decisions or going to the gym or whatever that case may be, we've all prioritized that. So I just want to bring that to light. And like, what was that flip of the switch moment that you were like, I need to make some changes?
For me, it was plain and simple. I was going to die if I didn't. I got diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. I was like,
I'm going to die.
That was my mind to it.
This is a make better decision or die.
Or you're not going to be around. At the time that I found out, my youngest was in his mama's belly. So it was basically, for me, it was like, okay, I need to be around for all of his major accomplishment and milestones in life. So it was that simple for me. I was about 270 pounds. My A1C was like 12.9, something like that, if I remember correctly. So I was literally on my way. I had my eyesight was starting to go. I was literally on my way to diabetic shock or diabetic coma. So it was easy for me.
Wow.
Like, when you face with something like that, you're like, okay, well, it's time for me to put down the motherfucking fried chicken.
Yeah.
and eat the baked chicken. You know, instead of the only salad or the only vegetables I have was on my burger with my tomato and my lettuce, I had to start eating salad. And had to start being more active again, because I used to be really active when I was younger, but as you get older, you learn how to drive and you get a car, you're like, well, I'm not gonna walk down the street, I'm gonna drive down the street. You know, so it was that simple for me. It was just like, okay, for me, how long do I want to be around for my kids to witness those milestones, especially my youngest, because my youngest just turned 4. And so for me, it was like, I need to get it together so I can see all of these milestones and be there and have the opportunity to be a pop when my oldest or what have you has kids. That was the switch. And, you know, as y'all know me, I've lost over 100 pounds since then. So,
right. Yeah, man. That's a amazing. Hell of a motivator.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm.
Death is a hell of a motivator.
Exactly. Yeah. Coming back from it.
We talk about, yeah. Because you too, You too. Talk about your story. Yeah.
Oh well, shit. You got an amazing my shit kind of got a couple of layers to it. So like, as y'all know, like I had a stroke like 4 years ago. For some odd reason, because my recovery was so fast, it still wasn't an eye opener for me, but it got me to thinking, like, you know what I mean? It got the wheels to turn, like, maybe I should start thinking more. But you know what really freaking turned me to thinking, like, man, I need to freaking do something about my weight? Is when I freaking video chatted with my mom, and she said to me, she looked at me, she said, "Ooh, baby, you getting big." I was like, "Oh, hell no." You gotta remember now, my mom is a bigger lady. Too.
Yeah, you know I was gonna say.
And when your mom start a bigger lady start saying you getting big, you like you stepping into my realm, I'm like, oh hell no, I gotta do something about that shit. And we all worked it out together to where I had a gym membership the next day. And I was with 250 then. Here it is, what 6 months later, and I'm down to 210.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. So I've lost 40 pounds in 6 months. I went to the gym today. Mm-hmm. On that trail, been working it out.
It's funny you say that. Grandmamas and mamas, when they get to a certain point, they typically don't say, "You look big." They'll say stuff like, "Oh boy, you ain't eating." You know what I mean? Right. But when she was like, "Oh, baby,
you getting big?" I'm like, what the fuck?
All right.
Like, am I that big? Okay. But I feel a lot better now that I done lost all that weight. You know what I mean? My body don't ache as much as it used to. You know what I'm saying?
You're not carrying that around, yeah.
Right, you're like Duke. You even know too. You hear me grunting and huffing and puffing every time I'm coming up the stairs. You know what I'm saying? I felt like Kung Fu Panda, like my old nemesis, the stairs. You know what I'm saying? Was fucking me up. I'm like, I gotta do something about it. But like, I'm definitely. Definitely glad I made the decision to get healthier and get better and work on myself, though.
My flip of the switch moment was my daughter.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. So as you guys know and our listeners don't know, the large portion of a couple of years when my wife was completely disabled in bed and she couldn't do much. And when I was going to counseling, when my counselor used to say go on runs to, you know, to help with the stress. And so I used to go on runs periodically in the morning just to kind of get some air, get some wind, you know, kind of feel, you know, get some, relieve some of that stress off. And one time I came in, I'm in the morning, I'm just sitting there and she wakes up, mama's in bed and daddy's in the living room. She goes up to me and she says, "Daddy, did you work out today?" I'm like, maybe just a little bit. And she's like, "But daddy, did you really work out today?" And I was like, "No." And with a straight face, she looked at me and said, "Daddy, mommy can't do much. So you got to make sure you're strong enough to take care of the family. So even if you don't work out, you should probably go for a run." And I looked at her. I looked at her with these big eyes. I was like, "You are absolutely right. You are absolutely. I had never been more humbled by a 7-year-old in my entire
life." I think even the Bible said, "Out of the mouth of children comes wisdom."
Oh my God. Look, man, I ran my heart out after that day. And I was like, look, I came back the next day. I was like, listen, I get a gym membership and I'm gonna start going regularly. This has to be a thing. And you know how, I don't know if you guys have ever had one of those older guys that are way too conversational at the gym.
I don't know nobody at the gym.
Neither do I. But
they come up and talk to me.
Maybe it depends on what gym you go to. Everyone goes to different gyms. I go to a gym that's smaller. So you get a lot of older people that don't want to be around a bunch of people working out. You know what I mean? You don't have, like, my gym has a silence code, no banging weight.
Right.
And so this older guy comes up to me. I remember because he came in with his slacks. He had a polo shirt and he was just holding dumbbells in front of him, but he wasn't doing anything with them. He was holding them And then he was turning and just staring at everybody in the gym.
That's kind of creepy.
Right. But he was this cute little old guy. He just like,
cute?
And they're not. Yeah.
That was like, creep status. I don't know how you got cute from creep status, dog. Because
as you old, you get smaller. As you age, you get smaller. Because gravity shrinks. Because we all lose the gravity. Right? So this grown man is in his 80s. He's like 5'2", and he's just holding his weight, just looking at everybody.
Whoa. How tall was he?
5'2".
So y'all was seeing eye to eye, huh?
No, we were not.
You looked him right in the eye, and you saw your future, didn't you?
No.
You saw your future.
Oh, shit. Oh, shit. Hey, he ain't you so much right now. He vertically challenged.
He saw his future. Listen. One of my biggest fears.
News met future news.
One of my biggest fears is
to be like him.
No, listen. The average height of a man.
I know, right?
My biggest insecurity is that as I age, I'm going to get shorter.
You not 5'9".
I'm not. I'm 5'8".
I know, right?
I'm 5'8" and a quarter.
5'6".
But at 70, yeah. No, I'm not 5'7". I'm not 5'7". He is like,
I'm 5'10". And you are not a couple of inches shorter than me.
I am a couple inches shorter than you.
No, you not.
I try to act like I'm like a whole foot short. No.
I said 5'6". That's 4 inches.
Listen. Sure. You're not going to win this battle.
That's why he's walking on his tippy toes. I know, extra right? Inches. Exactly.
He got them shoes with extra
soles. Listen, you're not going to win this battle because I'm so insecure that I measure myself all the time. Let me... I'd be at the doctor's appointment. I'd be like, what the height is? Is it a quarter? Did I lose the quarter? No.
Oh my God.
We good. I'll be checking.
Thank you for that. Thank you for that news. Thank you for that. Oh my God.
So this old 70-year-old guy was looking around the gym and he just looking.
Make sure
everybody.
You refer to him as future news.
Okay, fine.
Carry on.
My listeners. So future news is looking at everybody. I can't even say future news because he's right. I'm not right. There ain't no way in 40 years I'm just all going to lose all this melanin.
You never know. You have
no idea. No. Oh, I know.
You never know.
Oh, y'all got to stop. Y'all got to stop.
Never know. Never think.
Hey, I think Serena Williams or something, one of them Williams sisters is starting to do that. Yep. You know what I'm saying? Turning white. Michael Jackson went from being black and to looking like Diana Ross or shit like that.
Michael Jackson purposely bleached his skin. I don't know. Wonder Williams.
So don't say you can't go to white.
Huh? Yeah, vitiligo.
No real shit. Yeah. That's some made up shit if I ever heard of
it. It is. Have you not seen the model? There's a model with vitiligo. It's a real thing.
Oh, really?
Okay.
I'm like, yeah. but that's just spots though, right? The model I see is still certain spots.
Right. Now, what Michael Jackson did was he purposely bleached his skin so that way he wouldn't have like the spotted look. Because remember,
talking about the king like that.
I'm just saying, though, like,
if the man tell me he got vitiligo, leave him alone.
Michael just got it at 32.
Leave him alone.
I'm just saying.
You leave him alone.
I'm just saying. Hey, that shit sound kind of fishy. That girl, that model, was been dealing with that all her life. Michael just started dealing with it at, what, 32? I call him bullshit.
No, that's why he wore a glove on his one hand.
Oh,
exactly.
Okay, y'all informing me now because damn it, I thought it was some bullshit.
God rest his soul.
Forgive me, old great king of pop.
That's right.
So,
carry on.
So, white future news is just looking around the gym with his weights, and I walk by him, and he goes just like this. I done forgot how to do this. I'm like, you know, and respectfully, I said, it's okay, sir. You just do what you can. And he says it with a straight face. Yeah, I'm fighting for the next 20. I'm sorry. He's like, yeah, if I keep working out, it's the difference between living 5 more years and 20 more years. I've never heard something of these older people that's lived through life. They just got so much knowledge and they drop little stuff like that one. He's 70 years old.
That's why I like hanging out with older people with the elder. The stories that they tell, and then just like they worth ethic. Like my mom's husband, he's 70 something years old, and that sucker's still going out mowing yards and everything. Like he's freaking 27 or something. Like it's ridiculous how much this dude. I'm like, this guy's gonna die on that freaking lawnmower. Like he gonna work himself to death. He always freaking working and moving and something. But he was like, yeah. No, that's the secret to staying young is you gotta keep moving. And keep he moving, said, if you don't use it, you lose it. I was like, all right, I guess I can get that.
One of the things that like really broke me with like working in the hospital, because you see a lot of crazy stuff when you work in the hospital, but one of the things that people don't talk about is a dynamic of patients and their significant others' relationships when they get sick. When you get old, when we get old, things don't work as well as they used to anymore. Like whether it be your brain, your body, every stuff starts to fail in one person and not the other. And how they deal with that is just amazing. I remember, and this is one of them tearjerker moments, where a patient, he had dementia, he had Alzheimer's, and one of the things that always, he used to get agitated and angry and aggressive with people, and one of the things that always used to calm him down when he was in the hospital was his wife's presence, because that was his one constant, right? And he knew it. Like, if she was there, everything was okay, because she was all there mentally, and he wasn't, and he knew it, so he was like, all right, well, I'm gonna just, whatever she says is best. And I remember walking by his room, and it's a sunny day, and they're both sitting by the window, and she's just staring out the window, and he's just sitting in this chair looking at her, and she's like, "Hey, sweet, it's a beautiful day," and he's like, "Yeah, it is," and she's like, "Don't you want to look out the window and see all the birds chirping and everything?" And he's like, "No, I just want to look at you."
I heard
that. And I was like, oh God!
That's what I'm talking about.
That is beautiful, right?
See, the pop got it figured out.
Yo, like I'm just it was just like, man, that
beautiful.
That moment right there where he's not all here, where your home is no longer a place, but it's a person. That is a beautiful thing, man. And I was I get it. I totally get it. And I remember telling it to the other nurses, and they just like got teary eyed. I was like, "Oh my God, that's so beautiful!" And I'm like, "I know. I don't want to be like an emotional bitch, but I'm just
right." Hey, but I've always said this about women: women underestimate the power of their femininity. That those feminine qualities that women have, when they use them in the right way with us men, will make us melt like butter. We'll be like putting in their freaking hands, and they have no idea. No idea. So most women, I'm that way, have no idea.
Some women got too much idea.
Yeah.
Use that to their advantage.
I'll give you an example real quick. I know this kind of off topic, but I'll give you an example real quick. I watched the video. An older woman was talking to a younger woman and her husband. And the younger woman was complaining about how her husband was dealing with his kids. And she was like, "Yeah, well, when it comes to your son, you don't do this and you don't do that and they don't do this and they don't do that." And you can see the guy, you know what I'm saying, basically cross his arm and get real defensive in his posture and everything. And the older lady, she's like, "Watch this. I want you to check this out." She sat down right beside him and she said, "Sweetheart, look, I just want to talk to you for a minute and tell you that I love you and I love your kids, but they're not exhibiting the qualities that I know you would have for them, that you want to instill in them. And we need to figure out a way that we can, you know what I'm saying, get these boys right on track. And the guy was like looking around like, shit, babe, what the fuck we need to do? Goddamn, you know what I'm saying? Like, how do we get these motherfuckers in line? You know what I'm saying? And that just showed me how that feminine soft touch that just sprung him to fucking action almost immediately. But that's what I mean by when I say like that feminine quality. She was just nice and calm and cool, collected, and just.
I think it's interesting because there's that femininity and then there's that masculinity that men and women both have, right? Mm-hmm. And they work so well together. And then there's like, I want to say this generation that feels like they can say whatever it is they want to say on their mind. And most men will just receive it properly. There's a lot of relationships that just fail. And it's not necessarily because he don't do this, he don't do that, she don't do this, she don't do that. There's a proper way to communicate to people. And you yes. gotta, and it's not a generic thing. It's not like, I'll admit, I had to learn this. It's not like this is how I communicate, so I'm going to talk in a way that you can understand and break it down. And I remember when I was married, my wife was like, you can't talk to me like that. It makes me feel stupid.
You feel stupid, yep.
Right. And I was like, in my mind, I'm like thinking, no, I'm breaking it down so that way you can't get what I say misconstrued. There's a way to communicate to your significant others to where they can receive it. And that's mm-hmm. what you have to program mm-hmm. in your mind. You have to say, hey, look, I am going to not communicate this in a way that I typically talk to everybody. I'm going to communicate this in a way that you can receive it. Point blank, period. I don't care about everyone else. And that is what, this is the reason why I purposely say that being a best friend is the most important thing in a relationship to me, because I feel like if I talk the way I talk, y'all will still understand it. And I know I'm going to screw some shit up if I like try to, like there's going to be times where I talk like news. I'm not going to think, oh, how does she receive this? Let me word it in a way so receive it properly. At the same token, I'm like, at my best friends, I'm like, hey, y'all, today was just no. And y'all will be like, nah, I get it. Come on over. Got some friends. The game. Come over. You know what I mean? And I don't have to word it properly. I don't have to be politically correct. I can just be like, hey, I need you. I got you. You know what I mean? And I know that's unrealistic. Reality wise, because everyone's different, and the reason why I click with y'all is because I don't have to be politically correct. To our listeners, we are trying to be politically correct on this podcast. When we talk to each other, we are way, way more ignorant. And I think, and I know that's so, and I know that's a shock because even on here, I know there's some listeners that are like, hey, man,
but it's still healthy, and like that's what we've been talking about this whole time about health, right?
Yeah. And on top of that, we're not these social media icons. We're not these these platform people with college degree. We're just normal. We're just three Black people, different corners of the country that just randomly came together and was like, we're family, and let's just talk it out and get to a place where we all can be successful. And that's what this podcast is. I mean, that's the beauty of it. We'll pay some bills. We'll be right back. And we're back at the Real Dream Podcast. And our third topic involves a gentleman who has dubbed the name Sperminator. Please, let me clarify Sperminator. Otherwise, I know.
I'm sorry.
No. Of all the nicknames.
Sperminator.
I know. Ari previously revealed he used to conceive the old-fashioned way and would have sex with women to help them conceive. However, since learning of other ways to conceive, he now delivers his sperm in a cup so that he is able to protect himself and the other women he'd be helping that month. Long story short, Ari is a gentleman, is a 44-year-old professor who has fathered 78 children. And currently has 13 women pregnant. He is using a sperm bank to donate his seed so that way these women can become pregnant. Now, as you know, sperm banks have stipulations when it comes to fathering and accepting sperm. You have to be a certain height. You have to have a certain amount of college education. You have to be a certain, make a certain amount of money, because they have to go into a category so that way these women can choose who the father is based off of these genetics. Ari, a 44-year-old professor in New York, has 78 children. By the end of this year, he will have at least 91. I say at least because I do not think Ari is going to stop. He has relationships.
Wow.
He has relationships with some of these kids.
Really?
Yes, he does. However, he has been reached by challenges by the United States Department of Health, which says he needs to apply to be a licensed clinic and stop advertising his services. Ari publicly advertises that he is a successful college professor. He makes it known. So there are people that look for seeds of Ari.
Wow.
I know that there are some people that are okay with doing it. More power to you. I have no problem with that. I don't personally feel like I would ever do that, because I want to be a part of all of my kids' lives.
No shit.
How do you feel
about child support?
How do y'all feel about Ari's goal to get to 100 kids?
Man, hey Duke, you wanna go first on this?
All I gotta say, he's a dumb motherfucker. Carry on. That's it. That's all I gotta say about it.
I feel like Ari has took his chronic masturbation problem and turned it into a money maker. Seriously, have y'all ever even seen a sperm bank? Like, do you even know where to go and freaking do this at?
No. Nope.
Do
nope.
you even know?
Nope.
Like, not a clue.
I've never even seen a sperm bank before. Never seen one advertised. I understand he's a professor, right? So he big on research, right? But damn, like, seriously, you know what? I'm masturbating all the time anyway. I might as well make some money off of this shit.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
What the fuck happens if one of my kids find another one of my kids, and even though they got different moms and all that shit, you know what I'm saying, decide they want to be in a relationship with each other, and then they fuck around and have a, you know what I'm saying, deformed child or some shit because they ain't fucking want to let motherfuckers know that they came from a fucking sperm bank and they got the same damn dad or some shit. And it's 100 of them motherfuckers in New York, the likelihood of them shit happening very high. I'm sorry, that shit is just wrong.
Obviously, there's different types of like fetishes and stuff in the world. And I think, I mean, don't get me wrong, there are some fetishes that I just don't understand at all. This sounds like one of them. You want your genetics to pass on more so than any other human being in America. I don't know. This. Having 100 kids.
I can't get behind that. Like, you know, not saying that it's a bad thing, you know what I mean, that he's doing that or not. You know what I mean? Like, that's not my decision to make. But me personally, that's not something I can get behind. Not like, maybe, you know what I'm saying, 3 times or something like that, you know what I mean? But like 91 times, that's a little bit ridiculous.
One of the things he said was not to focus on me having 91 kids or how many kids I have. Was to focus on the woman or the couple who can't have kids and they're having their first child or their second child. And that's what he focuses on. I mean, I get it. I think it's a beautiful thing. I'm just...
He's excessive.
Yeah.
It's excessive, you know what I'm saying? Anything in moderation is my saying. Drinking in moderation ain't bad. But when you start drinking excessively, the next thing you know, you done wrap yourself around a light pole. Having a bunch of kids running around with your DNA in excess like that is going to run into some problems.
I think so.
Like I said, you know what I'm saying? It's all in the, you know what I'm saying, in the state of New York. The likelihood of those kids, you know what I'm saying, running into each other. And who's to say, if, you know what I'm saying, they're going to know they share genetic codes. And if they don't find out that they do and they start freaking breeding and having kids of their own.
It just sounds like from the show with Law and Order SVU. I just don't like it, you know?
Right.
There was a episode of Family Guy. I don't know if any of our listeners have ever seen it or heard it. There's an episode where Peter apparently had to donate sperm in order to pay for his wife's engagement. She made a joke where she called him and was like, "Hey, Peter, hey, it's your daughter." And he was like, "Don't ever call this number again," and hung up. Shit. And so she was like, "Yo, what was that reaction for?" And he was like, "You know, I donated sperm. I did it anonymously to pay for your wedding ring. You know, I just, when I got the call, I was scared." And she was like, "These kids deserve to know their father."
Oh, like, shit.
And he was like, "All right, fine. Make my name unanonymous." The next day, like 60 motherfuckers showed up to his house. He was like,
"Oh, daddy! Shit. Oh, shit."
Here's what pissed me off the most about it, right? One of them tried to steal his wife. Because he's 40. So one of them was like 20 years old and was like, I'm gonna shoot my shot. Shoot
my shot.
Right. And when Peter found out about it, they got into a fight. He is 44 years old fighting a 22-year-old version of himself. He got his ass
whooped. That bitch.
It's not for me to understand. I just know it's not for me.
No.
Yeah, no. My secret sauce is only meant for one purpose.
I know, right?
It's either going to get me another child or it's going to be wasted. That's exactly it. And on that note, thanks for tuning in to the Real Dream Podcast. From news to Duke and Mailman, we want to say thank you for listening to us.
We appreciate you guys.
Yes, yeah, sir. We're digging all the love we're getting out there.
Absolutely. To my boys over here, as always, I love you guys.
Love you too. Love you both.
And I wish you guys nothing but success and happiness. And to all our listeners,
every day.
And to all listeners out there, y'all keep dreaming.